This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We can also talk about Mozambique now, which is still embroiled in a post-election crisis and where we've also documented attacks on the press, or even the countries of the Sahel where there has been political instability in recent years and where we've seen the media really coming under attack.
That was Mutuki Mumo, Africa Program Coordinator with the Committee to Protect Journalists on Media Freedom in Africa. Details coming up. Also, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter's body is lying in state in the Capitol's Rotunda in Washington, D.C., and tensions rise between Chad and France. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter's body is lying in state now in the Capitol's Rotunda in Washington, D.C., with the public invited to pay their respects. People were already lined up at 4 a.m. today, despite cold, windy conditions. Tomorrow, Carter's body will be taken to the Washington National Cathedral for a national funeral service. We have on the phone VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell, who is reporting on the ceremonies. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Anita.
Good morning from snowy Washington, Yehia.
So, Anita, the country is honoring former President Jimmy Carter. What is happening today?
So today, the former president's body is lying in state in the heart of American democracy. That's the Capitol Rotunda. Members of the public are invited to come and view his casket and pay their respects. And this is all ahead of what one might call the main event tomorrow, which is the main national funeral, which will be attended by, we expect, all of the living U.S. presidents. And the eulogy will be given by Joe Biden.
So you said people who will be attending the service at the National Cathedral will be former presidents as well?
Yes, we're expecting former presidents to come. We've heard from former and next president Donald Trump that he will be attending. Of course, as I said, Biden will be giving the eulogy, and other former presidents are expected to attend. This is in line with protocols. This is pretty normal. The last time a U.S. president died, that was former President George Bush. All of the former presidents were in attendance.
So the schedule for the ceremonies tomorrow starts when?
It's about 10 o'clock in the morning. That's when we're going to have the main event at the National Cathedral.
VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell speaking with me by phone about the services honoring late President Jimmy Carter. Thank you for your input, Anita.
It's a pleasure, and I'll be there at the funeral with the president, and I will report everything I see.
You'll be able to find more about the services for President Carter and his legacy on voaafrica.com and voanews.com. Chad's government has reiterated its order for French troops to completely withdraw from the Central African country before the end of this month. The order follows remarks by French President Emmanuel Macron, who said African countries are ungrateful for France's role in helping to fight militant insurgencies. Mokirwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé that anti-French sentiments are increasing across West and Central Africa.
Il est temps qu'il quitte notre pays, qu'on puisse nous assumer.
Secondary school teacher Hassan Dibungi says it is high time African countries assume full independence by ordering French troops out of their territories and making sure France does not exploit them economically. The 32-year-old says Africans are capable of reorganizing their armies and protecting their territories without the presence of what he calls exploitative French troops. Hassan spoke in Chad's capital, N'Djamena, on Wednesday as several hundred youths assembled to express their dissatisfaction at French President Emmanuel Macron's comments during a speech Monday. Macron said France did the right thing by deploying its military to the Sahel region, but said the region failed to say thank you. Macron said the states of the Sahel region would have fallen under the control of jihadist insurgencies and would not be sovereign today without French intervention. Macron's statements sparked a wave of anger and disbelief across Africa. Chad's president, Mohamed Idriss Déby, said Tuesday Macron's declaration dishonors and disrespects Africa. Déby accused Macron of being in the wrong era and said France has until the end of January to completely withdraw its troops from Chad. A special commission created by Chad's government to supervise the withdrawal of French troops also met in N'Djamena. Chad's Prime Minister, Alamaye Halina, chaired the meeting. He says Macron's statements are an insult to Africa, which deployed over 200,000 soldiers conscripted from French colonies to help France in battles against Nazi Germany during World War II. He says without the Africans, who Macron describes today as ingrates, France would have been defeated in the war. Halina said France has never given significant assistance to Chadian troops, adding that Paris has often focused only on achieving what he called French strategic interests. Kaman Bado Umar is a political affairs consultant and researcher at Chad's Consortium for International Migration Studies. He says there is an unprecedented wave of growing anti-French sentiments all over Africa, especially in Mali, Senegal, Benin, Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Niger, Gabon, and Chad, where France always attempts to dominate politics by imposing people loyal to Paris as presidents. He says African countries like France are sovereign nations with militaries strong enough to assure the integrity of their territories. He added that the presence of France in many African countries that are rich in natural resources like gold, uranium, and oil is seen by civilians as exploitative. France has always said its troops are in Africa to fight Islamic State and other terrorist groups. In 2012, French troops helped drive out Islamist militants who had seized control of northern Mali. But Senegal's Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko says Macron's assertion that France is helping Africa to maintain peace and protect its sovereignty is erroneous. In addition to Chad, Senegal and Ivory Coast have demanded the departure of French troops from their territory. Chad says several hundred of about 1,000 French troops have left the Central African state within the past month. France handed over its military base at Faya-Largeau in northern Chad as part of the withdrawal last month, according to Chadian officials. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
How did Africa fare in terms of press freedom in 2024? What does 2025 look like for journalists in Africa? For answers, I talked with Motuki Mumo, Africa Program Coordinator with the Committee to Protect Journalists.
When we look at the year 2024 in sub-Saharan Africa, I would say there were some definite lows for the media. And to go through some of this, we continued to see arbitrary detention of journalists in some of these countries that we cover. So if I was to give you examples, you know, currently we have a South Sudanese journalist called Emmanuel Monichol, who's been detained since last year in November and has not been charged. And that is just one example of arbitrary detentions that we see in some parts of this region where journalists are arrested, not told why they're arrested, sometimes detained without being taken to court. We also saw that political instability continued to be bad news for journalists, to be bad news for media. For example, here in Kenya, where I live, protests, anti-government cost of living protests were associated with attacks on the press in the form of physical attacks, brief arrests. We can also talk about Mozambique now, which is still embroiled in a post-election crisis and where we've also documented attacks on the press, or even the countries of the Sahel, where there has been political instability in recent years and where we've seen the media really coming under attack. So we continue to see cybercrime laws being used against journalists. Usually these laws are justified by governments that they're good for safety online. But in countries where we document, for instance, in Nigeria, we've seen those laws being weaponized by governments against the media. And we're concerned that we're seeing other countries trying to enact worrying laws. For example, Zambia, which is currently considering new cybercrime and cybersecurity legislation. And finally, with all of these happening in the home countries of journalists, we're also seeing exile, the exile of the media being an increasing concern. Journalists fleeing conflict, fleeing dangerous situation at home, worried for their freedom or their physical safety.
So now, moving forward to 2025, CBJ has been calling for investigation of attacks of five Kenyan journalists. Mm-hmm. It has been calling for Kenyan authorities to ensure journalists can cover protests safely. CBJ has been urging Ethiopia to commit to press freedom. Mm-hmm. M23 rebels attacking radio stations, journalists killed in Eastern DRC, CBJ calling on Angola to commit to press freedom, CPJ calling on South Sudan to actually reveal the whereabouts of a certain editor-in-chief of a privately owned newspaper. Will these calls be heeded by governments as we move to 2025?
We cannot discount that as we go into 2025, it's not an easy year. And I'm not going to speak on behalf of governments. I can't speak on behalf of governments. What I can say is that I'm bringing forward into this new year hope. Hope that these changes and progressive developments we're calling for are actually achievable. And it's because we've seen these things being done. You know, we've seen movement in the past in cases that we thought were difficult or intractable. We've seen governments choosing to do the right thing. An example that comes to mind is, you know, late last year, we saw the Gambian president withdrawing a civil defamation suit against journalists. There's a lot that governments in this region can achieve in terms of press freedom. And none of this is very complicated. None of this is very difficult. It's simply a matter of, you know, choosing to do the right thing, choosing to recognize that journalists are essential to the democracies and to the societies that we want to build.
That was Mutuki Mumo, Africa Program Coordinator with CPJ, the Committee to Protect Journalists. She spoke with me from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. The White House says it has determined Sudan's paramilitary rapid support force and its proxies are committing genocide in the country's civil war. The U.S. administration said Tuesday it has imposed sanctions on the RSF's leaders. A few days earlier, Sudan's army chief, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has welcomed the Turkish offer to resolve the brutal 20-month-old conflict between his forces and the RSF. At a meeting in Port Sudan, Borhan asked Turkey's Deputy Foreign Minister Burhan Aladin Duran to tell Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan he welcomed the initiative. Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the prospects for the mediation offer.
Well, on the one hand, Turkey has been increasingly supporting the Sudanese armed forces under General Burhan, and so it's seen as an active party to conflict, and so it's not a natural fit to be presenting itself as a mediator. On the other hand, Turkey's stepping up sends notice to other external supporters of that conflict that there is significant actor with long-term interest and resources in the region with whom they're going to have to deal. And so that might create an environment where those external actors are going to negotiate more seriously in trying to find a resolution in Sudan, which has so far been lacking. In the end, it is the external actors that are going to come around and collectively seize their sponsorship of the opposing sides if we're going to get to a ceasefire and then open up humanitarian corridors and reach a peace agreement. And it's with those sorts of agreements that Sudanese civilians can be brought into the center of these negotiating processes. And it's these civilians who have been sidelined by this conflict and this perception that it's just the two generals who are fighting for control of Sudan.
In early December, Turkish President Erdogan said in a phone call with Al-Burhan that Turkey could step in to resolve disputes between Sudan and the United Arab Emirates and prevent Sudan from becoming an area of external interventions. How crucial is that to end the conflict in Sudan?
External actors are central to the conflict in Sudan. It's now become a regionalized conflict, and you have these regional powers who are actively carving up Sudan and seeking to either install their vassal state or, work through proxies to advance their interest, to the detriment of Sudanese civilians. And indeed, we're at a place right now where it's not clear that Sudan can be reconstituted as a single state. The UAE has been the single outside actor most widely cited for fueling the conflict, providing arms, drones, other material, logistical support to the rapid support forces. And so getting them involved seriously in negotiation will be critical to realizing a ceasefire and some sort of durable peace process. And it's not just the UAE, of course. You have Egyptians, Saudi Arabia, Russia. They're all actively playing a part in fueling multiple sides in Sudan. Moreover, there's been a perception of impunity on the part of these external actors. There really haven't been any reputational or financial cost for them to intervene. And this is what has contributed to the ongoing deterioration of conditions. We're really seeing a breaking up of Sudan like we saw in Yemen. Turkey's involvement may change that calculation. It may cause the UAE and other external actors to realize there are going to be costs for their continued funding of the conflict.
In a statement last week, the United Arab Emirates welcomed diplomatic efforts by Turkey to resolve the ongoing crisis in Sudan. How significant is this position to the Turkish mediation to resolve the conflict?
Ultimately, the UAE is only going to change its posture if it concludes that the costs outweigh the benefits for being involved. And this is where Turkish involvement could be very relevant. Turkey has long-term interest in the region, and with Turkey's stepped-up engagement, the UAE may realize that continued sponsoring of the conflict is going to be costly both in financial terms and political terms. And so it may be more inclined to come to terms and reach an agreement where all the external actors, even if they don't get completely what they had initially aimed for, would be satisfied that none of their rivals would gain the upper hand in their stead.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. The Seychelles archipelago of the east coast of Africa is a cultural melting pot. Long-time residents there include people with Chinese ancestry. But Beijing's investments in the strategically located country have also attracted new arrivals from China looking to do business with the island nation. Kate Bartlett reports from the main island of Mahé.
Chinese flavors, sometimes with a touch of Creole. Molly Rosalie describes a common Chinese Seychellois food here.
Let's say chow mein. It's a Chinese dish. It's a chow mein. Mien is the noodle. So, but we say chow mein. So it is cooked in the Creole cuisine.
Chinese Seychellois culture is not only reflected in the food here, it's also a part of the background of people like Molly Rosalie and other residents in Seychelles who have Chinese ancestry. Rosalie speaks fluent Mandarin and introduces the local culture to the new wave of Chinese tourists and business people here. However, the new arrivals from China and the long-time residents here don't share too much in common, says Paul Chow, who is also of Chinese descent.
I speak only Creole, and they speak only Chinese, so there's no way I could mix with them.
In recent years, China has directed its attention to strategically placed Seychelles, whose location gives it easy access to Africa, the Middle East, and South Asia. But this island was not the point of destination when Charles' father arrived.
My father came to Seychelles in 1943, I think. But he came to Seychelles by accident.
Originally from southern China, Charles' father was heading to Madagascar, a popular place at the time for Chinese people seeking work. Someone on the boat got sick, and the passengers were quarantined here in Seychelles. Charles' father stayed, found work, and married a local woman.
Chinese moved anywhere they think there's an opportunity.
In its history, Seychelles has been a part of France, then Britain, before gaining independence in 1976. It is now home to a majority of people who are Creole, with French and African ancestry. Descendants of Chinese migrants make up some 500 to 1,000 of the population here. Most of their ancestors left China to escape poverty. Then, more than 10 years ago, Beijing started funding construction projects in Seychelles, bringing in a new wave of Chinese workers. China's ambassador to Seychelles describes them as symbols of bilateral friendship. Sylvester Radegond is Seychelles' Minister of Foreign Affairs and Tourism.
Certainly for the 4 years that I've been Foreign Minister, I've seen how that relationship has grown.
Again, here's Paul Chow.
I don't think the Chinese would do anything with Seychelles except want to look it. Have an interest here so that they can oversee what's happening in the Indian Ocean. China is so rich now, everybody welcomes the Chinese.
With tourism being one of the main industries here, guides such as Rosalie look forward to a newly launched direct charter flight from China, with the hope that it will bring new waves of business to Seychelles. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Mahé, Seychelles.
The Nigerian military says its troops had killed 34 Islamist militants in a gun battle in northeastern Borno state, and 6 soldiers also died. Reuters news agency reported that military spokesman Major General Edward Buba said the clash took place Saturday in Sabon Gari village when the militants ambushed troops returning to a military base. The militants belong to the Boko Haram and Islamic State West Africa Province, or ISWAP. He said they were riding on motorcycles and trucks mounted with guns. The troops, along with reinforcements from the Civilian Joint Task Force, militia, and vigilante groups, successfully repelled the attack, he said. Nigeria has been grappling with a 16-year-old long Islamist insurgency in its northeast, driven primarily by Boko Haram and its offshoot, ISWAP. It has led to huge human and economic losses, including mass displacement and a humanitarian crisis. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.